Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us today. A little bit of housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see a section called Handouts, and the slides for today's presentation are there for you to download and follow along. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block and we'll moderate those to our presenter. When the webinar ends, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future webinars. We are recording today, and so watch for an email on Wednesday of this week with a link to the recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance. And I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois.
Thanks, Rachel. Today, our speaker is Caroline Dunn. She is a community nutrition researcher focusing on dissemination and implementation of policies that encourage healthy eating and active living in children and youth. She completed her master's in human nutrition at the University of Alabama and her PhD in health promotion, education, and behavior at the University of South Carolina. Today, she is presenting to us on examining faith-based communities as leverage points for the prevention of childhood and adolescent obesity. And at this point, I can pass it over to Dr. Dunn. Thank you.
Hi, and thanks so much. So today I'll be talking about some research that I conducted when I was a graduate student at the University of South Carolina, and really focusing on how our work in this area informed multiple studies which sort of fed one into another. What I'll try and do as we go through today is pause after discussing each section to see if there are any questions. So please do feel free to ask questions along the way, and I'll do my best to answer them as appropriate. So just as a quick welcome and overview, I'll start by going through a little bit of the background on the study and the larger study within which the work was situated, discussing a little bit about childhood obesity and the potential of faith-based health programming to address these issues. I'll discuss an overview of the Faith Activity and Nutrition Program, which again was the larger study in which this work was situated, and then the conceptual basis for the research. And then I'll talk a little bit about the first study, our systematic review, which is currently under review right now at the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, and how that informed our qualitative studies. Finally, I'll discuss sort of overall conclusions, a summary of all of the studies and aims, some strengths and limitations of the work that we did, and then future research and programming. So a little background, which I don't think will be surprising to anyone on this webinar, is that childhood overweight and obesity are a challenge nationally and especially within the southeastern United States. As you can see here, combined overweight and obesity rates for ages 2 to 19 are higher in South Carolina than they are nationally, and this is not unreasonable to see in most southeastern United States. We also see that these rates are highest among some of our minority populations, specifically Hispanic, non-Hispanic Black youth, again, both for our national measures and in the state of South Carolina. And we know that when thinking about childhood overweight and obesity, there are many, many areas that can influence behaviors that are related to these outcomes, specifically physical activity and healthy eating. And while many of the habits that we see in children and adolescents are influenced by those things that happen within the home, we also know that there are many other settings and contexts in which behaviors are developed, in which environments affect intake and activity and sleep, and that it's important to think about these community contexts as well as the household context when thinking about health promotion activities. At this point, we can see that a lot of the research in this area is focused in the school setting. And in our program, we thought it was very important to consider some of the lessons that we had learned in the school setting and how these might be applied in other organizational contexts, and specifically in a faith-based context. So a little bit of background for people who may not be as familiar with faith-based health promotion. Faith-based organizations such as churches, synagogues, and mosques have a rich history of involvement in health promotion. and specifically because many of the core missions and values align with physical health promotion. So we see prehistoric depictions of things like the laying on of hands or demonic possessions and priest physicians, all the way through sort of the establishment of what we consider traditional hospitals, missionaries focusing on disease treatment, and then the growth of religious hospitals. And this has all sort of led up to in the early 1990s when we saw sort of an explosion or a beginning of faith-based and faith-placed public health partnerships. And I want to just take a quick minute to define the difference between faith-based and faith-placed, because I think this is something that's very important and we'll discuss within the context of our qualitative study, which is faith-placed partnerships are partnerships in health promotion activities that are situated within a religious organization, just like they might be situated within any other organization, or that partner with organizational groups like churches in order to recruit populations. This is quite different from a faith-based promotion activity in which elements of the organizational context are intertwined into the promotion activity. So, for example, in a faith-placed health promotion program, such as the Faith Activity and Nutrition Program, which I'll discuss in a moment, scripture is worked into and contextually provided as part of the intervention itself. In addition, within these contexts, some of the organizational structures, such as health ministry teams, pastoral leadership, are really promoted as part of a program and not simply adjacent to used for recruitment and intervention activities. And again, I'm happy to answer questions about any of these things as we move forward. So when thinking about the work that we were doing, I think it's important to contextualize this within the larger study in which I was working. So as a graduate assistant at the University of South Carolina, I was lucky enough to work with an amazing team led by Dr. Sarah Wilcox, that was implementing the Faith Activity and Nutrition Program. So the FAN program was originally developed in partnership with the Seventh Episcopal District of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in South Carolina, which targeted organizational level change to create healthier church environments that supported additional physical activity and healthy eating within the context of the religious organization. And that original study demonstrated significant improvements in leisure time physical activity and healthy eating, increased fruit and vegetable intake among AME members in participating churches. So what we were able to do is to take this evidence-based program and really think about within the context of a program that has demonstrated positive, significant positive change, how can that program be scaled up and implemented in a way that can create larger population level change? And so through that, the FAN program dissemination and implementation study, which is funded in part by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Prevention Research Center grants, was started. So the first phase of that program was a partnership with the Fairfield County Behavioral Health Services. And Fairfield County in the state of South Carolina is one of the most medically and rurally underserved communities in our state. What this approach looked like was more of a bottom-up approach or a grassroots approach where researchers partnered with health promotion group within the county and went to all churches within the county and offered partnership and offered programming that could be implemented within their church communities. Within the community, 54 churches elected to participate, which were divided up into 36 churches being trained in this program in the first year and 18 being trained in the second year. And then the second phase, which was again tested against implementation of the first phase, was a partnership with the South Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church. And this represented a little bit more of a top-down approach where research partners communicated with an organizational structure, specifically the United Methodist Church's South Carolina Conference, and took more of a top-down approach, working with leadership to then disseminate the program to churches within their conference who were interested. And from that, about 117 churches completed training, with 12 doing what we would consider partial training. And while the rest of the presentation won't focus as broadly on this overall program, I'm again happy to answer questions about the larger dissemination implementation study if additional context is helpful. So the purpose of the studies that we wanted to do, and that I'm going to really focus more on today, was to look at examining faith-based organizations as potential leverage points for the control of childhood and adolescent obesity. Again, we thought that this was an appropriate setting to sort of investigate this potential because, as I mentioned, of the history and mission of faith-based organizations as health promotion partners, as their history of proven success in improving physical activity and healthy eating. And then also importantly, because families are incredibly involved in faith-based organizations. Research from the Pew Center shows that one of the main reasons that adults who have left religious organizations return to them is because they have children. And understanding the context in which parents and children interact within that organization, we thought was an important kind of aspect to think about when looking through organizational structure as it might apply to these concepts. So we created a conceptual model based on the work that we had done in faith-based organizations and also depicting kind of that structural model using Cohen's model of health behavior. And so within this, we thought about, you know, what the overall elements of a church mission are, as well as thinking about kind of what that church environment might look like as it feeds back into healthy eating and physical activity. Within our sort of overall conceptual model, you can see that the largest area here is the church mission, and thinking about what the mission of this organization would be in general, not necessarily as it applies directly to the outcomes of interest for us. And we thought this was very important, just as it would be in any other organizational context. So again, for those of you who have worked in a school context, promoting healthy eating and physical activity, very often, I think, in the school context, we hear, you know, some of the barriers sometimes to things like effective nutrition education in the classroom are competing priorities that teachers may have with things like making sure that students are meeting common core objectives or making sure that students are meeting grade level reading objectives. And that we have to be very aware as nutrition educators how the work that we're doing fits into that organizational mission. So again, we wanted to make sure that the organizational mission and here that church mission was at the forefront of what we were considering. Now, within that organizational mission, we thought it was important to point out that churches likely saw multiple elements of health as part of their mission. And this was pulled directly from several organizational directives, specifically looking at the different types of holistic health that churches dealt with in this area, specifically thinking about spiritual health, emotional and mental health, as well as physical health. And then for our focus, thinking about this realm of physical health as it applied to Cohen's structural model. So thinking a little bit more about opportunities and structures, programs, cultural and media messages, and then social structures and policies within the organization that could all impact the outcomes that we were interested in. So again, healthy eating, physical activity, and subsequent childhood weight. What we ended up doing for this, and I'll go through this study quite quickly to sort of give some context to how we developed the qualitative study at the heart of this presentation, is we really dug deep into the literature to try and figure out a little bit within the peer-reviewed literature what aspects of faith-based healthy eating and physical activity interventions we should be focusing on or leveraging within the context of our qualitative work. So the primary purpose of this first study was to really think about these different published papers and look at them in our ability to review elements of participant demographics. So who were these studies targeting? Who were they reaching? How were they prioritizing populations? Who were they reaching? How effective they were? What adoption looked like, implementation as well as maintenance. And these are all part of the larger REAIM framework. And so we did this by searching several databases and these looking sort of at our general terms. So identifying faith-based organizations based on a long list of faith-based terms, looking at physical activity, nutrition, and obesity terminology, and then really, again, focusing in within the context of the United States. For this study, we included all papers that were published in English language peer-reviewed journals conducted in the U.S., were interventions, so again, not describing the methods or the background of a study, And then also included individual level healthy eating and physical activity outcomes. Because we were really interested in this in the term or in the sense of an organizational context and setting for our next study, we only looked at those studies that were included or conducted within an organizational setting. And then also, as I said, were faith-based and not faith-placed. So the studies also needed to involve some element of organizational context in terms of relating interventions back to, for example, in a Christian context, biblical scripture, sermons, and again, this could be a little bit different depending on the context of the religious organization itself. Here's just a quick Prisma flow diagram, and you can see we screened close to 20,000 studies for this and moved forward to a final 38 studies for our qualitative synthesis, consisting of 46 articles. And the way we ended up with such a larger number of articles is that we made very certain that we were searching the literature for studies, not just our outcome studies, but follow-up studies that included some maintenance characteristics, as well as previous studies that had been published. So including those methods or background studies for the context of what we were looking for. We looked at studies based on the level of intervention. So were these studies or were these interventions implemented at the personal or interpersonal level, or were they implemented at an environmental or policy level, meaning where were the changes made, as well as those that were implemented at multiple levels. And I'll talk a little bit about that. For our data extraction, we looked at sample characteristics, nutrition and physical activity interventions, outcomes of interest, populations of interest, and then these re-aim dimensions as they were reported. This is just a quick idea of our re-aim coding, again, and I'm happy to share this, as well as the article that we hopefully will have published soon as it is under review. And I will go through these quite quickly since the re-aim aspect of this is not the purpose of the study, but you can see that for the studies that we looked at, we didn't have incredibly high reporting for many of the re-aim characteristics, with the exception of adoption, which at least 100% of our studies included at least one indicator from adoption. And you can see implementation, 95% of studies included at least one indicator of implementation. However, maintenance was very low, and this is not quite surprising. This is something that we see in many evaluations of the re-aim literature. Overall, reporting for re-aim elements was not incredibly comprehensive. Most were moderate, but this is really what I wanted to sort of focus on because this is something that we used very much to develop some of the qualitative portions for our next study. One of the things that we focused in on was the population of interest for studies that had been conducted in this area in the United States. And we found that 11 interventions were conducted at multiple levels, meaning that they focused in on either environmental or policy interventions, as well as inter and interpersonal interventions. These were largely based on two specific interventions, the body and soul intervention and the FAN intervention. And subsequent studies were then either adapted or modified to fit specific intervention outcomes or populations. And then one additional intervention that was conducted in a religious school. So thinking about these ecological studies, one of the important things that we noticed is that among the ecological studies, specifically the studies using the FAN or body and soul program, none of them measured outcomes in populations under the age of 18, which when conducting an organizational intervention, ideally the intervention would reach all of the members of an organization, including those under the age of 18. And so as we were doing this, we realized that there was sort of a hole in the literature in this area that helped shape our understanding of the need for the qualitative study that I'll talk about. We did identify three studies that were relevant to children and youth. So the first was the Shining Like Stars intervention from 2009, which was a randomized controlled trial in four churches that focused on a four-lesson curriculum increasing moderate to vigorous physical activity. This study did result in significant increases of steps per minute during Sunday school and resulted in some screen time changes for children in the intervention churches, but again, no healthy eating outcomes were reported in this study. And the second study was the Jewish Day School Wellness Initiative, which was our one ecological study. And this was a pilot intervention among two Jewish day schools that really targeted different areas, including health education, physical education, the school environment, family involvement, and staff wellness. So again, implemented across multiple levels and did result in a significant increase in the number of children meeting physical activity goals. And then finally, the Fitness You Enjoy study. And this was a one-group pre-test, post-test study conducted in two churches with 12 weekly sessions that showed no significant outcomes, but again, was a small, more of a pilot type study. So from this, we really saw that there was room in the literature and room in this area to grow and expand in our understanding of what an intervention would look like, targeting these behaviors within the context of a faith-based organization. And so that's how we kind of came to study two, which we considered our conceptualization study. And the purpose of this was really to understand or to examine understandings, interpretations, meanings, and perceived opportunities associated with the role of faith-based organizations in promoting those healthy eating and physical activity behaviors in children and youth. And we did this again in a sample of United Methodist churches in South Carolina. So even before we get to the limitations page, I will acknowledge there are several limitations to the nature of the group that we pulled for this specific qualitative work, which is it is a group of leaders in one state and a group of leaders specifically in one denomination. So the generalizability of what we found may be limited by some of those factors. So for this study, we used a lot of the information that we had gathered from our review of the literature and from those previous studies in faith-based organizations to help develop an interview guide that started off with some introductory questions, so helping us develop more of a contextual understanding of each individual organization, the organization's size, the breakdown of the number of children and youth versus the number of adults, what types of programming were available to children and youth on a regular basis, and then moved into some more general questions about kind of just the connections between faith and health, specific questions about programs that had been brought up during those introductory questions, how church leaders conceptualized opportunities for interventions targeting or prioritizing children and youth, thinking about some of the social structures and policies within the organizational context that applied to children and youth, and then different aspects of messaging. And then finally, we sort of ended on a note of just discussions of the role of the church in general as they're part of or in their responsibility of promoting health for this population. We worked with our IRB for our interviews to have those approved, and permission was granted by all of our participants to record. The interviews were all conducted by phone, notes were taken, and then interviews were transcribed verbatim and pseudonyms were used to assure anonymity. The analysis was done independently by coding five initial interviews to sort of help develop codes, which were initially based on that conceptual model and interview guide, as well as, again, that conceptual model and information from our previous review. Using input from senior advisors, we then double-coded an additional 12 or 10 interviews, and then I coded the remaining interviews using constant comparative methods with previous coding that had been done, going back to the larger group to discuss questions, new codes, or discrepancies where they may have emerged. For this study, I do want to focus very briefly on the recruitment methods that we used. So we created a sampling structure that we thought was very important based on the existing partnership with churches as part of the overall faith activity and nutrition program that I described. Again, because the faith activity and nutrition program was ongoing during this time, we thought it would be important to sample both a set of churches participating in that intervention as well as churches not participating in the intervention, because we thought it might be likely that we would see differences in responses from churches who had elected to participate in a health intervention versus those who had decided not to participate. We also thought it was important to do this because at the same time that we were working on this qualitative investigation, the National or International United Methodist Church released an initiative called the Abundant Health Initiative that focused on improving the health and or the health of children around the world through increased physical activity, improved nutrition and decreased malnutrition, improved mental and emotional health, and then also tobacco cessation. And so this was a time when we thought it was very important to understand these views among UMC pastors, specifically because this was an initiative that the United Methodist Church, their organizational body, was really, really supporting. During our interviews, we did ask pastors to provide contact information for an additional church member or community member who may have specific knowledge, opinions, or background in this area. So, for example, several pastors provided us with contact information for either the director of their children and youth programming, for a parent that was highly involved in the church, or for someone in their community that was, you know, potentially leading some efforts in partnership with their church that were sort of part of the greater community and mission of the organization. So in the end, we sampled 20 congregations. 10 of those congregations were fan-participating churches, and 20 were non-fan-participating churches. We had a pretty interesting range of size. Our churches were all different sizes, with 8 small churches having under 100 members. The majority of those churches we talked to were medium-sized churches, so between 100 and 399 members. And we actually had 4 large churches that had over 400 people within their membership. We did see a pretty proportional breakdown of the percent of members who were under the age of 18, so about 20% of members. We had a 50-50 split among that. The majority of our churches were comprised of predominantly Caucasian members. We had 4 that were predominantly Black or African American, and 1 congregation that was predominantly Native American. And then I think this was one of the very important contextual questions that we asked to start with, which was if our church leaders could tell us a little bit about some of the programs available in their organization to children and youth. And so you can see here that especially among the first few activities, Sunday school, children's church, Sunday school nursery care, youth group, and children's choir, the majority of churches had several programs or had at least one program, and most had several programs where children and youth were already participating in activities regularly throughout the context of their church membership. Several also had some additional activities such as either a child care, child development center, or daycare, and then also one had an after school care program. From an individual standpoint, you can see that we had 6 additional participants who participated in interviews who were from van churches, and no additional participating interviewees from non-van churches. The majority of the people we talked to were either lead associate or assistant pastors. We did have several children's or youth pastors, as well as health committee members, and either church elders or supply pastors. Similar to our church racial breakdown, the majority of people we spoke to were white or Caucasian. We did have about 20% African American, and 1 identify as Native American. And the majority of those that we spoke to were female. You can also see an age breakdown here. So through the course of our interviews, we had several overarching themes that really emerged. The first was that our church leaders had a lot of concerns and differing concerns for young members of their congregation, and talked a little bit about how those concerns might differ from members of their community. And I'll go into each of these themes in a little bit more detail. We also saw that church leaders identified the existing church structures that played a role in health behaviors, that they identified partnerships as important to addressing these childhood health behaviors. So not just thinking about the context of the organization itself, but how that organization related to other individuals and organizations. And then also that church leaders really looked at the role of adults as role models for children and as church members for role models in the community. And then finally, the the final theme, that addressing health concerns about obesity, physical activity, or healthy eating among children and youth needed to be tailored to the spiritual environment of individual churches. So first, a little bit about the concerns for children's health. Most pastors spoke very, very bluntly about the idea of holistic health. And I think this was one of my favorite quotes of the entire project was, I think it's important to eat right, to get enough exercise and to sleep well, and to have good emotional and spiritual health and good relationship health. I mean, good health includes so much, and it's important for us to be wholly healthy. And that sort of health can help us to do the work of building the kingdom of God. And I think this really spoke back to thinking to our conceptual model, which was, what is the overall mission of that organization? And thinking about how what we're talking about really builds into the purpose of that organization and the context of that organization. And then thinking about health behaviors and obesity, this was something we saw among several of our pastors, which was that there may not have been concern or great levels of concern about obesity or health behaviors in their own congregation, but when thinking about the role of a faith-based organization within the broader context of a community, that church members were very concerned about what that looked like across the board. They were also very concerned about this idea that health behaviors were more important than obesity itself. And that really thinking about how they could change behavior and not focusing on the outcome would be important. So many of them spoke very bluntly about screen time, and they spoke bluntly about screen time in the context of keeping kids and youth from paying attention in church, but also in the context of thinking about how that kept them from being physically active, and thinking about how that might be a potential area to kind of leverage getting youth more active. One thing that was very important that leaders mentioned were these existing church structures. And those were importantly not just physical structures, but organizational structures as well. So things like activities and programs that could encourage healthy behaviors. Specifically, some pointed out the fact that for many, many organizations, existing structures could be leveraged or were being leveraged to promote things like physical activity. Specifically, physical activity was something that I think many churches felt like, or many leaders felt like they were doing a good job of promoting within their activities, as opposed to kind of these opportunities for unhealthy behaviors to exist. And so I think another one of my favorite quotes was, I know on occasion that youth group will have donuts to try and lure them in. And so thinking about maybe some of the opportunities for unhealthy behaviors, and what that looked like, and how they could maybe reflect upon making some changes that could improve the health of their offerings. The other types of structures that people really talked about were the physical structures. So identifying things like fields, gymnasiums, fellowship halls, volleyball courts, and different structures that could be used not only to promote physical health within the church community, but also how these structures could be used within partnerships outside of the church context to encourage healthy activities within things like youth sports leagues. And then also the mention of the importance of methods and structures to communicate information. And I think it's very important that not only did churches and church leaders acknowledge existing methods to communicate important information, but they very much acknowledged in the context of working with children and youth that sometimes these existing structures may not be the most appropriate approach, and thinking really about how to adapt their approaches to meet the needs of the specific populations that they're prioritizing. It was also very important that they mentioned partnerships. And partnerships were not just within the church or outside of the church, but with families and caregivers, thinking about how parents could be involved. So again, one pastor said, I know that some parents are minimally involved with school, but they're very involved in church. So this, again, we thought was an important contextual factor, linking this type of organization potentially back to high involvement from an entire family unit and not simply a space where a child is for a period of time and then returns to the home, but being able to use this context to link family behavior and child behavior within that organization. Churches also were very clear that they were happy to accept and look for partnerships with experts. So, you know, people with quote unquote qualifications like doctors, nutritionists, and coaches. And then also thinking about what they could then provide back to the community. Again, whether that were things like the physical structures of a church, the size, the spaces, or whether that be programs like community food pantries, or, you know, thinking about the sort of mission-oriented nature of that organization. Churches also thought of adults as being important role models for children, and that was, you know, everyone from a parent to a pastor to, you know, anyone in the church, older youth being role models for younger youth, but then also thought about churches and church members as role models for the community. So thinking about how just as the pastor is a good example for the church is a good example or should be for the community, and maybe how what that organization could do within its own context could hopefully influence what people were doing in the context of the rest of their social interactions. And then finally, and I think this is probably something that is not surprising to see, is that the people that we talked to were very, very confident that a tailored approach would be needed. And that it's not only a tailored approach to the organization, meaning churches, churches as a whole, but tailoring approaches for individual churches. So thinking about when partnering with research organizations or creating programs and interventions, really working to make sure that those interventions and that those programs are spiritually tailored. So again, faith-based and not faith-placed. So fitting within the context and mission of the church, but also thinking about how those programs would need to be tailored to individual contexts. So some of our smaller churches or churches that had been losing losing membership or seeing membership decrease, really thought about how a program for them might look different than it would for a large church, or for, you know, a church with maybe larger physical resources too. And so I'll very quickly touch on how we used some of the findings from our qualitative study to work on another study that we are in the process of submitting, which examined opportunities, programs, messages, and social structures related to these approaches in a set of churches participating in our FAM study. So using some secondary data, and again, I'll go through this quite quickly, from our program plans for churches who were participating in the Faith Activity and Nutrition Program, and then information from monthly technical assistance calls, we did a quick coding process where we identified the target population for an activity. We identified the structural model of health behavior for each activity, so whether it was a program, an opportunity, a social structure or policy, or a message, and then also identified the health promotion activity, so whether it was nutrition-related, physical activity, mixed, or not specific. So again, thinking back to our conceptual model and a lot of what we learned about different populations within our qualitative study, we really tried to sort of examine some of the things that we were seeing within the churches we were already working with. What we saw is that several of our churches had very different breakdowns in terms of the number of youth-focused activities or adult-focused activities. And while youth-focused activities were generally not, not as common as those activities that were focused on the larger population or creating environmental change, youth and children were the most commonly targeted recipients or commonly identified priority populations for interventions out of all of our specific populations. So other populations would be older adults, men or women who were adults, as opposed to children and youth. And so again, we see that out of the majority of those intervention activities that we saw, most were ecological, meaning they would reach all members of a church population, and only 67 were specifically focused at youth. When lumped together, all other populations had about 250 activities, but again, the single population with the most activities were children and youth. Again, similar structures across all of these. And then when thinking about strategies for improving health among children and youth, we saw some different strategies that had also come up in some of our qualitative interviews. So this was kind of a nice way to triangulate some of the qualitative research that we had done. So things like planning healthier menus for activities like Vacation Bible School, some of those existing organizational activities, emphasizing messaging and stories regarding dietary choices of biblical figures, and then incorporating exercise during activities. One thing that we did find that I think is very important to think about is that when activities were targeted or prioritized children and youth, they often included adults as support figures. And so those activities that really focused in on youth had great potential to reach not only children and youth, but reach other members of the church as well, simply by the nature that children and families would be participating in church activities as one. So thinking about sort of all of these things taken together, there was a general consistency to the theoretical underpinnings of the studies that we worked on. And again, from a more qualitative research standpoint, we were able to think about this first study as examining the literature and how what had been done and what had been reported in the literature could help in us develop qualitative questions that could enhance our understanding of this context, and then able to use that understanding of the context that we gained from our qualitative study to examine some existing data and see if we could maybe triangulate some of those findings to existing data. So thinking about this in terms of opportunities moving forward, we saw some pretty consistent activities that were identified as potential potential activities or important to pastors and church leaders in our qualitative aim that we then saw actually being implemented in our quantitative third study. So we saw, again, adult role models being important for children and youth actually implemented in our third study where we saw adult and youth activities combined. And so I think there's, again, some nice kind of triangulation that we were able to see between the qualitative work that we did and our ability to examine that in a specific quantitative action. So in general, I think what we gathered from this is that there are many activities and many opportunities to involve children and youth in healthy eating and physical activity within this organizational and contextual structure. And we really thought that for the most part, our leadership was very interested in this idea. Again, I'll just highlight quickly some of the limitations of that second and third study, which are the homogeneity of samples. The fact that we worked within a denomination that was really already including health in their sort of belief as they embarked on a health initiative. And then also just thinking about a little bit that our data for the third study were not necessarily collected for the purpose for the purpose of triangulation, but instead for process evaluation. But in general, I think from the standpoint of the strength of the qualitative work that we were able to do is that it adds to a relatively small body of literature looking at this context in the sense of how it could be applied to physical activity and healthy eating outcomes in children and adolescents, and also provided some very specific real-world examples and strategies. We also were able to do some very consistent data collection and evaluation, and then also double-code a lot of our work, too. And so thinking about all of these things taken together, there's a lot of opportunity in this area, and I think in a lot of other contexts as well, to think about how organizations could be, organizational partnerships could be leveraged for health promotion for children and youth, maybe outside of just the school-based environment. So thinking about this idea of sort of health in all places, and that contextual idea of health and what that means. And I think that one of the biggest takeaways from the work that we were able to do was really hammering home the point that understanding the different contexts of organizations from organizational leadership and membership was incredibly important and will remain incredibly important as those partnerships are developed in the future. And on that note, I always like to end with this slide, which as a lifelong member of the United Methodist Church, I thought this was a great depiction of the importance of the food pyramid in a faith-based setting, and the importance of cheesy chicken casseroles, which was something we heard a lot about in our qualitative interviews. And so on that note, I will, let's see if I can expand and see if we have any questions. And I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Yeah, so I actually had one question for you. And as people have more questions, please feel free to type those into the question box. So one question that I had for you is, can you give some advice to people who maybe want to do research with faith-based organizations as how they can start building those connections?
So absolutely. I will say, I was very fortunate to be working within a research group that had already built wonderful partnerships with several faith-based organizations and faith-based coalitions. I think that just like we see in other community settings, that acknowledging that this is a marathon and not a sprint is such an important aspect of building these relationships, that we have to be very careful about going into, and again, not just necessarily faith-based organizations, but any type of organization, and be realistic about the expectations for a project, and also be realistic about our goals for a project. I think that's incredibly important. And I think the other important lesson that I would suggest is the importance of listening. And I think that a lot of times we as experts in our field are tempted to go into partnerships and explain why we're an expert and why what we want to do is so important. But I think that especially in an organizational context and when building those relationships, being able to listen and understand why that organization's context is important is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes so much sense. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your research with us today. It was great to learn more about what you are doing. And at this point, I can pass it back to Rachel.
Yes, thank you very much. Just a reminder that there'll be a short survey when I close out the webinar. And we did record today's presentation, so you should see an email on Wednesday of this week with the recording, the link to the handout, as well as the CEU certificate. We do have a few more sessions left in the Journal Club, so please look at the SNEB website. And then also we have a webinar planned that's being hosted by the Dairy Council of California. They've always done excellent presentations for us. So please look at the SNEB website to register for that one as well. Thank you all. Oh, we did have a question pop up. Hold on a second. We found it particularly challenging to navigate the existing church schedule. Oh, with an attempt to schedule our programs. I don't know, Carolyn, if you're still on the line.
I am, yeah.
Did anything come up in your work regarding best practices to deal with that scheduling?
So I'm not fully sure necessarily what the scheduling or programming that the
challenging navigating the existing church schedule with an attempt to schedule their own programs.
Yeah, so one thing that we found very helpful was working with churches to build onto existing scheduled programs. So one aspect of the FAM program in general is building some of the intervention activities into existing church programming. So not necessarily adding onto, but building into and really letting churches kind of take the lead with how that works. All that being said, it is incredibly challenging because church schedules, especially in larger churches, can be jam-packed. Hmm. I think if you're thinking about or trying to go in with additional programming, that can absolutely be a challenge, which again, I think is something that we sort of were able to circumvent a bit by thinking about how we could best leverage some of the existing activities and programs and build into instead of in addition to.
That's an excellent point. All right. I don't think I see any other questions, so thank you all, and we hope. Oh, it says we've also found it difficult to recruit families with children in elementary and middle school.
Within the church setting?
Oh, especially in small and rural areas, she added.
Yes. So I will absolutely agree with that. One of the challenges, I think, in the rural setting, and this is definitely something that we saw within the context of the state of South Carolina, is that in rural areas, and this, again, I think is maybe one of the reasons that school-based programming is a popular approach to reaching a large number of children, is that small rural churches don't necessarily have large populations of children. And so it may be difficult to get a quote-unquote critical mass of participants, depending on what the goal of an intervention is. Again, for us, when we were thinking about this, we were not necessarily interested in recruiting and retaining individual participants, but really thinking more about the organizational context and how we could change organizational aspects to improve the health behaviors or health opportunities, and a little bit less of sort of a program delivery aspect. And so again, thinking about how programs or interventions can fit into the existing areas where churches already have families and children participating. So for example, within the context of a Sunday school classroom, and you can sort of see how previous studies like the Shining Like Stars initiative have done something along those lines. So thinking about, as children and families are in the church, where in the church are they situated? Or where in, again, not necessarily just a church, but any organizational context, in what activities are they already situated? And how during those activities can we maybe work to reach them where they are? But I do agree that's a very big challenge, especially in smaller rural churches.
Excellent. Well, thank you for adding some insight into that. All right. Thank you all for attending today, and we look forward to seeing you back next week.
Thanks so much.